Welcome to Disruptive CEO Nation, where company founders, entrepreneurs, and cutting-edge thinkers drop in from around the globe to share startup stories, insider insights, and hard-earned success lessons. Now, here's your host, a woman who mastered business by placing heels on the ground all over the world, having worked with and coached CEOs and senior leaders from over 90 countries, and who wants you to build your best business future, Allison K. Summers.
Welcome to this edition of Disruptive CEO Nation. I have a wonderful thought leader for you. We're going to talk about, I think, the changing landscape of stress and everything that's going on in business today. And he's going to have some things that you're going to want to hear. He is an author. He's written books such as Flying the Fire. I want to say this with all fun, but Flying the Fire, Bleeding from the Middle, Make It Matter. And of course, today we're going to talk about his most recent book, The Mentally Strong Leader. So welcome to the program, Scott Motz. And he's going to just share tons of wisdom with us. So Scott, welcome.
Thanks for having me here, Allison. And bonus points to you up front for having glasses that match your cool jacket veneer. I was not able to pull that off. I have gray vest, black glasses. I didn't pull it off like you did.
I do a little color in my life.
Yes, so. That's right. As it should be.
Yeah, no. Hey, we can be real serious business leaders and still have a little fun. So, Scott, you are the CEO and founder of Profound Performance. And right now, we want to talk about this book. And it's like I said, mentally strong and finding the things that you need to get through the challenges of today are crazy. And I'll give you an example of something just to kick us off is I was in an education session where they were talking this week about how AI is going to kill SEO. And it's not only going to kill SEO, it's going to kill all the businesses that are built around organic search. And it won't kill completely, but if that is your line of business, it will kill it. The other conversation I had this past week was I currently work in a healthcare association. And a lot of medical associations, healthcare associations, make their income off of journals and keeping them under lock and key and behind firewalls. But if AI can't see your firewalls, it's gonna be. So we're talking about how that income is probably, I think, gonna go away in 2 to 3 years for associations. So everywhere we look around us, the landscape's changing. And enter you, your authority, and this concept of building habits to help you be a mentally strong leader. Scott, just share with us why this topic was so important to you.
Yeah, a couple of things first. I'll give a quick definition of mental strength. Just, Allison, just so we're all on the same page, because mental strength isn't necessarily a term that you may or may not have heard, or people may be making misassumptions about it. I'll just quickly give a definition, and then maybe I'll talk about, to build on what you're talking about, the examples I'm seeing in the world that say it's now is the right time for you to grow mentally stronger as a leader and as a human. So that we're all on the same page. For mental strength is the ability to self-regulate your emotions, your thoughts, and your behaviors for productive outcomes, regardless of the circumstances. You know, a shorthand way of saying it is it's about managing yourself internally so you can lead externally. If you pause and think about the ability and the power to do that, it's an incredibly powerful resource in today. In fact, I argue that it might be the leadership superpower of today, this ability to self-regulate your emotions, your thoughts, and your behaviors. And in the book, The Mentally Strong Leader, I talk about the elements of mental strength that require self-regulation to be able to achieve productive outcomes, to achieve, which are, of course, fortitude, you would probably guess that, and confidence and boldness, decision-making, the ability to stay focused on your goal and the ability to stay positive and deliver a strong message as a leader that exudes positivity. These are all things that belie and require mental strength. And I see more and more today, and I'll be curious about your point of view too, Allison, I see a world very similar, like what you're talking about, where uncertainty is on the rise. It's becoming more and more chaotic, more and more exhausting, more and more fear infiltrating into the workplace. And I'll speak just for the United States now to this point, but we have more and more division in the United States, where sometimes we can't even agree on what the facts are. We have debilitating distraction piling up, and inspiration can go missing at times. And by the way, this is what the data says, not just my opinion. You have this cauldron, this smoke building, this haze, and mental strength is more and more, in our research, surfacing as an answer, a leadership superpower that you can cling to almost as a life raft in a world that's growing more and more chaotic, with AI just being one of the many things on the pile that we have to worry about.
Yeah. I think that it's on multiple levels, right? So we all understand that you need to be a strong leader and a concise leader and an empathetic leader.
Yes.
I'm one of those people who wear my heart on the sleeve. You know what I'm thinking. It's people trust because I pretty much wear my heart on my sleeve. But sometimes I know, Scott, I know I need somebody like you in my ear keeping me balanced, because sometimes it's that. And I love how you use the phrase productive results.
For productive results, right.
I am so excited. I've talked to a lot of leadership authorities, people who speak in similar spaces like yours, but they don't have that word productive, like that end outcome that we're all chasing. So I want to throw to you, what do you see in terms of the changing landscape of stress for business leaders today? Because you not only have been a very solid business leader throughout your career, but you've been coaching and training and leading for many years now. How is it different today?
I think there's a couple of things, Allison, that I'm going to start with the obvious. The first being, there's not a workplace, maybe in the world, that hasn't been affected by the shift to remote work. And you could argue we're still figuring out where we're going to land on that. Mm-hmm. I keynote at companies all around the world, and you'll talk to a CEO who's convinced, okay, everyone's coming back to the office. Someone else will say, no, we decided 3 days a week at home or in the office, 2 days at home. We're all still figuring out where we're going to land. But one thing is for sure, not since the Industrial Revolution has there been such a profound change in the way we interact with each other, the identity we develop relative to the jobs that we hold and the people that we work with. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the big changes that it's caused is more and more insecurity as we move to a world where less and less of our time perhaps is spent with people live, face to face, next to them, and more is through a screen. We start to engage in our own conclusions, and we start to jump to conclusions about how we're doing in our job, what our boss thinks of us, whether or not we're really connecting with our coworkers in all the ways that we need to. And it adds stress to an environment where we're already doubtful and asking, am I enough? Do I stack up? Mm-hmm. Do I have what it takes to make it here today? And I think it's this internally motivated and created stress more than ever that's starting to surface. And before I go on to talk about other things, do you agree with that, Allison? Have you seen that same internal reality starting to surge even more?
100%. One, the human brain, they're why seekers, right? Yeah. So if you don't help your employees understand information, they will start to fill the gaps themselves. And sometimes they'll fill it with things that you're like, oh my goodness. I once had an employee that I thought I was inspiring and motivating. And then I heard from somebody else 15 minutes after he walked out of my office, somebody else got a hold of me and said, what did you say? He thinks he's getting fired. And I'm like, oh my goodness. How bad did I blow that? And now, to your point, Scott, you layer on, you don't have that common bonding. I happen to work at a location right now, and I'll throw it out. Everybody that listens knows I manage nonprofits. Nonprofit I'm managing right now is housed under MCI USA. I'm going to give them a shout out because they have done the best at a virtual work environment out of anybody else I've seen, but it's difficult. I 100%, Scott, agree with what you're saying. There's a breakdown in a humanity in some ways by everybody just being remote. And I'm happy being remote, but it's not for everybody.
It's true. And relatedly, you were at another issue I think that's happening I've seen in the workplace. And I'd be curious for your point of view too. What I see over and over again with companies that I talk to all around the world and in the context of our research. And I'll explain what I mean by this, but I see people forgetting what their baseline is. And I'll explain. Let me explain. For example, in mental strength, for example, when you're talking about mental strength is not, Allison, just acting tough. It's not just, although that's certainly a part of it, it's not mental health, which is a topic worthy of an entire another day and another time. The opposite of mentally strong is not mentally weak. We all have a baseline of mental strength that we can build from. And in the book, The Mentally Strong Leader, I go into how to find your own and assess your own baseline and build from that, to build your fortitude and your confidence and your boldness and your decision-making and your ability to focus on goals. And what we see is people forget that in many things, they can return to the baseline to see where they stand and say, okay, I know I have a baseline of ability to deal with what's going on in the world, but it gets wiped out. So with more and more stress, there's more and more advice on how to be more resilient at work. We get overwhelmed with it all. And then we start to forget our baseline of, we've always had a level of natural resilience within us. Mm-hmm. But we forget that. We begin to compare to other people and we begin to say, I don't know what my baseline is. It doesn't matter. I need to stack up to all the advice I'm being given and how to be more resilient. I need to stack up to how I see my peers engaging and becoming resilient. And this increasing amount of stress is causing each one of us to forget and start from a baseline of understanding our own strength in something that we're starting to deal with. We start to lose ourselves. We start to lose our identity with the amount of stress that's piling up. Does that make sense? And do you agree?
Yeah, I do. I think it makes complete sense. I think it's this idea of self-doubt, which was the conversation we had before we went to this. It's easy to have creep in, and especially if you're in a situation where you're alone too much in this changing environment that we're talking about. And wow, there's so many other places we can take this, but I want to jump topic if it's okay with you.
Sure.
Another of my absolute favorite topics when we talk about pressures on a business owner or founder or somebody in the C-suite or just a manager. One of the biggest challenges I think that creates burnout isn't necessarily the pressures that we face, the amount of decisions that we're required to make and feeling comfortable and confident with those decisions. And so I was really impressed when I was researching for this interview that decision making is one of your 6 main pillars. So can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah. And I think sometimes it's interesting, Allison, people sometimes are surprised when I'm walking through what I call the mental muscles of mental strength and saying that decision-making is one of them. But one of the problems is that we let our biases enter when we have to make decisions. We all know about when I talk about the 12 most common biases in the book, we all know about the most common bias, confirmation bias, right? This is the tendency that you're searching for, you're interpreting, you're favoring information that fits exactly what you want it to.
But I think so I'm going to ask 6 people until I find at least 4 that agree with me.
That's right. Then you finally find that person, no wonder your decision is biased. Or you can have what's called the sunk cost bias or the IKEA effect. It applies to IKEA furniture, and I'll explain how, which is where you overvalue something, some level of input, because of the amount of work that you've already put into that thing. So you're going to decide to move that project forward. You've decided, I'm going to move that project forward because I've already put so much work into it. This is the IKEA effect. It's why people find IKEA furniture so fascinating and interesting, and they'll pay a premium because they get to put that thing together. And when they're done, they feel this incredible sense of pride. And because of that doesn't help in decision-making, right? We put our effort into this. We don't want to give up. That bias surfaces and we make a dumb decision based on work we put into it rather than an objective decision. So simply because of the reason of bias that gets introduced in our decision-making alone, it is absolutely a major mental muscle, that decision-making muscle that you have to build up with tools and habits to increase your mental strength. Thanks for noticing that. Most people don't always guess decision-making is part of mental strength.
I can tell you it absolutely is. And I can also tell you there's an epidemic of a lack of people in the workforce willing to make decisions.
Yes, that's right. I have a tool in the Mentally Strong Leader The book is built around habits that you build, Allison, things that you can do with habit building science, and tools that you can put into play to actually increase your mental strength. And one of the tools in the chapter on decision making is on indecision and how paralyzing it is and how it's important to, you have to evaluate the cost of a wrong decision, because that could be more expensive than you making no decision or making the right decision. You have to set time-bound parameters so that you'll actually decide. You have to accept inevitabilities sooner, and so on. And the tool describes how we can get past indecision, which is one of the great silent killers in the workforce today. Has this ever happened to you, Allison? Have you ever been in an organization with a leader who is indecisive, and everyone's thinking, oh my gosh, for the love of Pete, will you just make the call? And then when he or she finally makes the call, you don't even really care if it's the right one or not, if you agree or not. You're just glad they make the call so you can move forward. That speaks to the cost of indecision in our organizations today, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually say to people, like when you're mentoring people as they're coming up, and you probably have these things too, right? You can't move really far up in your career without making mistakes. And so I started in the trade show industry, so you could always make mistakes. And I say, you're no one till you make a $10,000 mistake. And it sounds so crazy. And I'm like, that's part of the path up, is knowing that will happen. The key to a good leader and a key to what I try to tell my staff when we work is, you can walk in and tell me you made the mistake, but don't look at me to try to fix it. I will fix it, but say, this is what happened, and these are my two or three ideas of what we can do next. As long as you do that, and as long as you're 100% transparent. I once made a mistake much, much bigger than $10,000, and that I'm going to lose my job. I got on the phone, called my boss, I was in the West Coast, he was in the East Coast, waited till it was time for him to get up and said, I need you to get on an airplane and come and help fix this problem I've got right this minute. Didn't even pack a suitcase, right to the airport. And I thought, I'm losing my job. Within a month, I got a major promotion because the company knew that I was willing to be transparent, pull in the right resources, and fix the problem. So decision making, I think what people feel as they go through their professional journeys, right? They don't know that a lot of times those company founders, senior leaders, I'd rather take somebody who's going to make a decision, even if it's right, because the majority of the time they're going to be right over somebody who won't make a decision.
That's exactly right. And may I speak to the other side of that for a second? It's also important to remember, I think, Allison, that. And then if you went ahead and made that decision, it really worked out for you, it sounds like. You're a bright woman, not surprised to hear at all. It led to a major promotion. Sometimes those decisions you make, they don't always necessarily work out. And so it's always important as well. A key part of mental strength is also to make sure you have self-compassion, right? And in the book, I talk about a simple tool you can do for those moments you realize, oh boy, I made a decision that wasn't the right one, or something didn't go right the way that I wanted it to. You can always stop and pause and take a self-compassion break, which exists really of three steps. First step is you got to get better at catching yourself when you're beating yourself up, which I teach this stuff, Allison, and I'm still working on that. But when you can catch yourself from beating yourself up in that moment, the first step is to just stop beating yourself up for beating yourself up. Realize you're doing it. Then you go to step two, which is in that moment. Instead, talk to yourself like a friend in need. Allison, if a friend of yours had made that decision, and she blew it, and it didn't lead to a major promotion, it led to something not good, and she wanted to talk to you about it, and she came to you, and she was telling you about the story, I don't think you would do this. Would you do this to her? She finishes after about 5 minutes telling you that story, then you interrupt her and say, okay, I've heard what you said. Now, I've come to the conclusion that you're a complete loser, right? You wouldn't talk to a friend in need who clearly needed compassion that way. So why would you talk to yourself that way after you make an error? And it takes it to the third step in the self-compassion break, which is just to remember the 90-10 rule, which is to always remember, whether you've made a bad decision, whether something hasn't worked out at work or in life, to remember the 90-10 rule, the third step, which is Remember that how you value yourself should be based 90% on self-compassion, 10% on assigned compassion, 90% on self-worth, 10% on assigned worth. Here's what I mean by that. How you value yourself should be based 90% on self-appreciation, self-respect, self-love, only 10% on assigned worth, what other people think of you. And sometimes, Allison, people will say, Scott, you're an inspirational speaker. Shouldn't you be teaching the 100-0 rule that 100% of how you value yourself should only be based on what you think of yourself and never what anyone thinks? I don't think that's realistic. I think it's a nice theory. But in truth, we all need that 10% external validation every once in a while from someone else to tell us we're valued and valuable, worthy and worthwhile. And but the problem arises, and that'd be curious on your point of view on this, Allison. The problem with that arises when we've made a bad decision, something's gone wrong at work, all of a sudden that 10% external validation, that rises to 30, 50, 90, 100% of how we value ourselves. All of a sudden, 100% of how we value ourselves is based on what others think, not based on what we think. We forget, we begin to chase approval instead of authenticity. We forget that instead of focusing on the external, am I accepted? Just focus on, am I accepted with me? Am I living according to my values? Is that, does that make sense to you?
It makes sense. And what I always say is, because you and I don't get to these places where we're at in our life without learned a lot of lessons, made a lot of mistakes, done a lot of course corrections. And when you are placing your self-worth so much on, like you said, what everybody else is thinking, we can all grow and improve, but you move to a place of fear. It's not self-doubt. It moves you to a place of fear. And I have friends who've come to me and they're in a place of fear. And I'm like, you either need to figure out how to get out of it or you will lose your job because it's self-fulfilling and you can't get to success out of a place of fear. And I think those things go together. I think this approach of the 90% and the 10% is an interesting one. And I think a difficult one to strive for.
Yeah, I think it is. But it's what helps separate the mentally strong from the not so mentally strong. But I'm curious, Allison, a question for you. As you're talking about fear, it's such a component in today's world. You talk about trends. The fear trend is indisputable these days. But I'm curious. I like to believe, and I like to help people sometimes understand that you also have the ability to reframe fear for yourself or for those that are working through it. I talk about it in The Mentally Strong Leader, but I personally believe that you can choose to look at fear and say that there's actually only three ways that you can fail: when you quit, when you don't improve, or when you never try. It's important to remember that failure isn't necessarily a person. It's an event. It's a point in time. And so even with, if you've ever had to counsel friends that have gone through something where they distinctly feel like they've been a failure, trying to remind them that, okay, I understand that, but it really is a point in time. It doesn't define who you are as a person. And oh, by the way, before you tried that thing that you were afraid of failing at, if that was making you nervous, that's a good sign because it tells you something was worth it. Otherwise, you'd be feeling nothing before you try any endeavors that make you a little nervous. So it's my way of asking, have you found success in helping people to reframe their own sense of fear and what fear of failure really is, because it's something I talk about a lot in The Mentally Strong Leader.
I think a lot of people, I don't want to say major on the minors, but if you spend too much time looking at all the little things, and I had a conversation this week with one of my direct reports who was focused on a problem, and I kept saying, what problem are we really trying to solve here? What is the, my favorite thing, let's if you work for me, you hear me say all the time, let's get to 30,000 feet. We're sidetracked on this very small thing that's not getting us to the goal line. I used to work with a board member, a board president, a volunteer president, who used to bring a little horse to board meetings. And when things would get sidetracked, she'd take the horse and she'd march it across the table. And she'd be like, this horse wants to get to the finish line.
And so I
think it's like, feedback loops are important, but when a feedback loop is in your own head,
yes,
you're in a place of fear. You create your own drama. And I think, like you said, to shift people out, I think it goes to your one of your other pillars here, which is goal focused. Get at it. Stop looking at the small stuff. What is the major goal here? What are some things that you can do that you can move forward, that you can feel successful to start that forward momentum again? I'm going to flip it and say, tell us a little bit about, if we head to your book, what is a little bit about the goal focus that you would want us to know?
Yeah. And sometimes people might be a little bit surprised, Allison, by the fact that one of the six major mental muscles that equates to mental strength is goal focus. But it makes sense when you think about it. One of the biggest interrupters of us accomplishing what we want to accomplish quite often is ourselves. The number of disruptions that are available to us at any given point in time are frankly incredible. And it could be as simple, Allison, and I talk in the book, of being disciplined. And you could use a tool, for example, like the mental spotlight. And here's how it works. I'll walk you through it very quickly. So I want you to close your eyes for a second, Allison, and I want you to picture that you're in a dark theater, like literally a dark theater. And,
okay.
And you see a spotlight shining down onto the stage below. There's nothing else in the theater, just a spot. And of course, you know how a spotlight works. It starts out narrow at the top, and then it widens until it's at its widest point on the stage. And I want you to think of that as a metaphor for maintaining focus and getting back to focusing on your goals and what's important. Because here's why that metaphor works. The first step of retaining focus and focusing and doing your deepest work is to create that dark theater environment. We all know what that means. Usually it means putting this sucker aside. Set that in another room if you have to. Create yourself.
For our listeners, he's holding up his phone. I'm sure.
Yes, sorry. Yes. Yeah. I forget we're talking to each other. I'm holding up my iPhone. Sorry. Creating an environment where you don't have any distractions, right? Now picture being at the top of that beam of light at its narrowest part, right? This is narrow because this is where you're deciding what you want to focus on. And the truth is, most of us, we don't actually have a problem focusing per se, Allison. We have more of a problem deciding on what to focus on. So at the top of that beam of light, it's narrow because you are deciding this is what I'm going to focus on. Now, as you ride down that beam of light, you'll notice it gets a little bit wider. And the intensity and the sharpness of your focus has to increase so that you don't go out into that dark environment. You want to ride that beam of light down and stay within that beam of light. Don't go outside of that. Don't let your attention drift outside the beam that you've created, that beam of focus, right? At the end of the beam, a light is where it's at its widest. This is where you're at. You're really locked in state. You're in a state of flow. You're mentally surrounding your task, and it's there where you drive your task to completion. It sounds crazy, but I've proven it through my research, Allison. Something as simple as a mental metaphor of a spotlight shining on stage, and your job is to stay within that beam of light and create the habit mentally of staying within that beam of light, can go a long ways towards helping you keep goal focus. And that's the beauty of mental strength. The habits you build don't have to be overwhelmingly complex. They could be simple things you can build into your life every day. And you can do that with over 50 habits that I have in the book.
I really love that from a visual standpoint. And I think for our listeners, it is worth picking up this book. And as you said, 50 things, by God, if five of them make a difference, it's worth it, right? It's the smallest of things that are triggers for us. And this idea of this spotlight is great. It's not only the cell phone, it's the way that we work like on teams, right? Is teams for good or for evil? Because it's a constant, it's good in some ways because I can quickly flick out answers to everybody or quickly check in with different people. But it's two things. One, a little bit of the humanness is lost because instead of saying, let's take 10 minutes and talk, I'm just texting you or sending you the notes. But I think about this analogy you give us of the spotlight and just everything that's pulling out our attention during the course of the day. That I wish we had a whole lot longer to talk. These interviews do go fairly fast, and now I am just so curious at what you would say is the biggest stumbling block for you that you have to work on. I always like to ask my guests, like, naked truth that you learned while founding your company or that you would admit to other people. What is the prescription that you have to write for yourself out of this book?
I like the way that you have that you put that, the prescription you have to write for yourself. I'm gonna remember that. That's really good. One of the things I talk about in the book, I'll hit this very quickly. We don't have a lot of time to get into this, is I talk about something that's known as the static trap. Right? And this has to do with problem solving, because if you want to have great fortitude as part of your mental strength, fortitude is a major muscle of mental strength. You have to evolve this to avoid the static trap, which is this. One of the big problems, one of the reasons that we don't always solve problems is because of this trap, which means, first of all, you deny that a problem exists. So you're static and you do nothing about it. You don't even want to admit that it's there until the problem can no longer be ignored. Okay, great. Then you create static around that problem, distortion, like that's not really a problem because of this. And you make excuses and you put so much into it, you don't want to talk about it. And then even though you've recognized a problem at that point, you remain static by not moving forward fast enough to do something about it. That is the static trap. And it gets in the way of us being able to quickly admit we have a problem and be able to work on something and move it forward. That is something I still have to work on, because the world is changing so fast. When I find something like, okay, this is going to be a problem if I don't address this in the way I talk about it, I have to dismiss myself from all the research I've been doing for years and accept the fact that this is yet another thing that is changing quickly. And I need to go to invest the time, the money, and the resources into researching how this change is going to impact work moving forward. So I'm getting better at admitting that issue sooner versus later. And that's a prescription I should write for myself more often.
Thanks for sharing that. Hey, Scott, anything else? You're a prolific author. Are there any podcasts, books, trends, things you would recommend to our audience that they should go check out? Again, aside from your books.
Yeah.
What else are you excited about right now?
Yeah, no worries at all. Just from a trend standpoint, I'm a big fan of the study of psychological safety. And if you're familiar with that, Allison, just the study of trying to figure out how do I create an environment for employees at work where they're going to feel like they can bring their best whole selves to the table. Amy Edmondson from Harvard is really the queen of this. And I just really, outside of my own books, I'm very fascinated in the topic of psychological safety and found that it's even influenced some of my own writing.
Thank you for sharing that. Hey, if people want to learn more, where should they go and what should they do?
Yeah, thanks for asking. First, a bonus for your listeners. If they go to scottmautz.com and then the good old slash, scottmautz.com/mentallystronggift, I have a 60-page free PDF ready for them to download that includes a 50-question mental strength self-assessment so that your listeners can figure out what is their mental strength score right now? How mentally strong are they? And what areas of mental strength do they need to improve upon? And then, of course, the PDF also includes prompts and questions to help you get the most out of the book, The Mentally Strong Leader. So they can go to scottmautz.com/mentallystronggift for their free 60-page PDF, which includes that mental strength self-assessment.
Fantastic. We'll put that in the show notes. So Scott, again, thank you so much. To our listeners, if Scott said something that you think somebody else needs to hear, pass along a copy of this episode. Of course, we always like ratings. Go ahead and give us 5 stars. If there's a disruptive CEO or an interesting thought leader like Scott that you think we need to speak with, send me a note at connect@allisonksummers.com. Until we speak again, keep your eye on the future and always be disruptive. Scott, we're so happy that we didn't even mention, we're so happy that you dropped in from San Diego, California.
Hard to be anything less than happy about living in San Diego. Thanks for having me, Allison.
Okay.
49 faces looked to him in triumph. Over the last 12 months, they had each taken turns and promoted his business for a week at a time, driving over $987,342 in revenue. What if you had a network of 50 centers of influence who promoted your business every week for a year? Grab your copy of the #1 Amazon best-selling book, The Ultimate Guide to Growing Your Business with a Podcast, at 33% off the Amazon price by going to ultimatepodcastbook.com. Again, that website for 33% off the Amazon price is ultimatepodcastbook.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.